This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed, this is FUBAR Radio. They call me Mark Dolan, and this is Mark Dolan eats the news. It's been a big old week. Labour Party conference, all sorts of dramas across the pond. Trump and Clinton lock horns on nationwide television. 100 million people watched it. Wowzers. Tom Hanks crashes a wedding. It's amazing. He was just going for a stroll in Central Park, and there were a couple who were having their wedding photographs taken on their wedding day. And he's like, hi, I'm Tom Hanks. I'd just like to wish you guys good luck. Now, I don't want to brag, but I was visited upon by a celebrity myself when I got married. It was one of the Chuckle Brothers, and can I be honest with you? He came to the reception afterwards, and he sort of hung around with the bridesmaids in a way that just wasn't right. I'm not saying a crime was committed. It wasn't. But it was just inappropriate. But surely the biggest story of the week is Big Sam Allardyce, who has been relieved of his duties as England manager after 67 days in charge and one victory. So he's got a 100% hit rate. He's basically our most successful manager ever. Bring him back! Now, I'm pleased to say that he's coming on the show. That's right, it's a FUBAR exclusive. We've got Big Sam Allardyce. Joins us on the line shortly. Now, first, because I called him because we're friends, and I just said, Sam, look, you know, you're going to get an easy ride with me. I'm not remotely journalistic. It's all cool. And he just said, I'm so sorry, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm going away, and I'm just like, this is a media blackout. So I called back posing as an Arab businessman, and he joins us at 10 past 12 today. That's right. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Now, with me in the studio to help digest the big stories of the week, I have none other than the extraordinary comedian Felicity Ward. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And the extraordinary comedian, Dave Whitney.
Hello, how are you?
You are a male-female-male comic, aren't you?
That's exactly what it says on my passport.
What's it like being a male-female-male comic?
It's everything I dreamt for.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Your audiences love you. You're a legend. You both are. It's great to have you on the show. Felicity, off the back of a hit run at this year's Edinburgh Fringe.
Being a male comedian, it was very
easy.
You
are a male guy comedian, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, as a woman.
How is that?
It's really great. I get a lot of TV.
Are people surprised when you're funny as a man comedian?
Yes, they are. They're like, oh, you've restored my faith in male comedians. I only thought that women were funny. And so it's just, you know, it's... it's just a refreshing change to be accepted for who I am.
Well, God bless you for that. It's brilliant to have you here. You've already achieved a remarkable feat on this show before you've uttered a word. And that's the fact, Felicity, that you're sitting on a very high stool and also cross-legged.
Yeah, it's good for my posture. I'm not showing off. It's just otherwise I'll slouch up in a ball. And I think I'm quite childish and I just like having my knees near my chest just in case.
Yes.
Some childhood trauma coming up there. I like to be prepared
My knees are near my chest too, but that's like an anatomical situation.
Yeah.
That's out of my hands.
There's surgery that can be done about that. A couple more FUBAR shows and you'll be here. You'll have the cash to do it.
If no one's actually met Mark in real life, his legs actually start at his nipples.
It's a good point. I'm all legs.
You are all
I'm basically 90% legs. But you are sitting on the stool cross-legged, but it looks healthy and looks very zen. Dave, you're not really so much as sitting on a stool, it's sort of molesting it. Oh, look, he's trying it. He's actually trying. And though it's the radio, I now have to paint pictures. He's trying to have the cross-legged situation.
It's not working for
him. No, I think...
he's got a red flannelette shirt and his face is now matching it.
It really is, actually. Your cheeks have gone tartan.
You've got clan cheeks.
Now, what we're going to do is we're going... hashtag clan cheeks. There you go.
And a different kind of clan. Scottish clan. Let's be very clear about that.
Let's do that.
Not starting with a K. Very much a C.
Even though
I thought you said clam cheeks. So.
Well, clam cheeks. Cheeks as well. You know?
It's worth pointing out that the clan cheeks thing is a bit Freudian because Dave is well known. He's a great guy, but also well known to be darkly racist.
Mm. And also, I'm wearing a dress that is covered in crustaceans.
Well, yes, you are. I tell you what, we're describing this very well.
I've got lobsters. I've got... Well, I don't have crabs, personally.
This is brilliant.
So I've heard.
It's good, isn't it? Describing my dress. How dare you? Dress. I'm just like a stream of conscious. I'm connecting. I'm just free-flowing with the ideas. And here you are, shooting me down, not accepting my offers.
No.
Now, I want to say that I'm glad that you're wearing today. You're wearing a summer dress, which is really nice. And it tells me that you're kind of you're in that vibe that we all are, which is that it's been a great September. It's been like the epilogue to summer.
Oh,
the,
my God. It's
the
been
slow
so
goodbye, hasn't it?
So beautiful.
It's like, you know, when you're watching a film and then they got this sort of bit at the end where the guy's back in the house with his wife and he's just having a cup of tea and it's just the wind down.
Yeah.
And because it's been such a good film, you're like, I know that the storyline is done now.
But I need one last
just,
hug with
just
these people.
Just give me a few seconds more.
It's going to be 24 degrees today in London.
Come on.
24. Come on.
Nailed it. Now, to have an Antipodean speak positively about the British weather is almost unprecedented.
Yeah, I've been crushed by this country and its insistence on low-hanging grey clouds.
Yes.
And so now I've got a bright side attitude. When it's 21 degrees, I'm like, whew, might need to take the cardi off.
Yes.
Where in Australia, I would wear an autumnal jacket in 21 degrees.
Yes, you would indeed. You'd be shivering. That is our nature as British people. We see the good weather. It's occasional. It's intermittent. It's itinerant.
I love winter sun. It feels so sort of, you know, like a gift from the gods. You know, it's low. You're lit well. Mm-hmm. It's not sort of over the top sort of interrogation light that the summer is.
It's
buildings
true.
Look better. I went for a run this morning. I rarely run. Wow. I did it because it felt like such a fresh, glorious morning.
See, that's the difference, though. Australians don't have a problem with cold. We don't have a problem with that at all. What we have a problem with is incessant grey.
Yeah.
When I first moved over here, I did not know it was possible to live, to go 10 days without seeing the sun.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, this is what suicidal thoughts are. Now I get it.
It's actually a colour in the Dulux colour chart, incessant grey.
Incessant
yes.
grey. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. It's very Farrow and Ball do a similar one, and it's extremely desirable.
Especially in
very
boudoirs.
2016.
Well, we have one of my colleagues arrived today, and she was wearing like a long scarf and like a she looked really becoming.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like a sort of woolen coat thing and she was just all set for the autumn. And it's like she just hadn't really thought this through.
You're like, you look beautiful, but you smell of sweat.
She was drenched.
You are overdressed.
Wool.
Yeah.
Hashtag moist wool.
Hashtag moist wool.
That's
moist,
as good
by the
as,
way.
As clan cheeks.
Yeah. Clan cheeks, moist wool. I mean, let's pack it up now.
Now, I tell you somebody whose clothes are wet with sweat at the moment, and that is the former England manager, Sam Allardyce. Now,
seamless.
I'm going to touch on this very briefly because, first of all, football is a divisive subject. In other words, if you like football and you're into it, then you're going to love this conversation. If you're not a football fan, it's white noise. This is why on the radio I never talk about TV series and box sets, because if you're not a viewer of, like, Downton Abbey, then it's just nothing what you're hearing. But I think this is a story which is front page and back page, which is a guy who's got his dream job. He waited 10 years for this. He's an esteemed figure within football, Sam Allardyce.
Was.
So he's lost his job, £3 million a year. And what I want to ask you guys is whether entrapment is good journalism or is it just entrapment, okay? Because I should just describe what happened, which is that the guy signed this deal for 3 years with the England team, with the Football Association, £3 million a year over 3 years. That's £9 million all in. Nice work if you can get it.
Cool.
I've had that broken down to around £60,000 a week in wages. Excellent. However, days after signing that deal, and before his very first training session with the team, he is talked into having a meeting in a hotel with some prospective business people who said, look, can we fly you to Singapore and Hong Kong? And can you do like 4 speeches for us, 4 public speaking engagements, $100K a pop? And of course, I think on paper, that's fine. It's basically an unbelievably good corporate gig, but good luck to you. However, the back end of this was also his suggestion that he could help them to essentially bypass certain rules and regulations in terms of player ownership and indeed football club ownership. We don't have time. We don't care about the details. But this was the bit where we'd be like, look, we're not going to break the law here, but I can tell you how to duck and dive and be a wheeler and dealer and sort of circumvent rules that were put in place by his actual employers, the Football Association. So I don't think, Dave Whitney, that there's much of a doubt that he had to go discuss.
Well, I just don't think it's a news story. Really, it's a headline. Footballer found to be greedy. This is it's not a news story. It would be a news story if they did the sting and he actually went, oh, this is phenomenally immoral and I couldn't possibly do that. That would be a news story for me. Talking about the FA.
This
is an organisation that is happy to give contracts to convicted rapists and make the captain of the country an adulterer who is known to be racist. And they're not considered moral.
Right.
It's not a news story.
You were saying those things like they're bad. Come on, Dave. He's done his time for rape. He's out. I mean, let the man move on. I hope that if anyone doesn't know me, that was very, very sarcastic. I'm a staunch feminist. And I'm panicking now. I'm really panicking.
I think your reputation is intact. Fear not.
Thank God.
But here's the question to you, Felicity, and this is a kind of wider question, which is the fact is that the Daily Telegraph created this sting operation in which they've posed as somebody that they're not, and they've got videotape evidence of him offering to break rules and basically just be a little bit corrupt for money. I think what's hurting people is that this was after he'd signed this lucrative deal, and also there's a suggestion that he was trading on the fact that he was England manager to get this deal. So clearly it wasn't like, you know, in terms of morality or at least integrity, it's not ideal. It's not a great start. Mm. But what about the entrapment thing? I mean, if he hadn't been offered this, he wouldn't have asked for it. It's not like he's out there selling his wares going, hey, guys, I'll break the law on your behalf. He was tricked into it.
Is entrapment good journalism? If it's not me, yes. Very good journalism. You'd be pretty angry. You go, but I wasn't. I didn't even set this up. You'd be furious. But he's been there for 67 days. You got to sit that out for a year, don't you? Got to sit it out for a year before you undercut this like multi-million-dollar job that you have, or $9 million job that you have.
Yeah.
P.S. Why is anyone getting paid $3 million or £3 million for anything? Why is anyone getting paid £3 million for anything? What, nurses? Give nurses £3 million? Give teachers?
That's always the comparison, isn't it? When, when I can't remember, the Welsh player got sold to Madrid for $100 million. People said you could build a hospital for that.
Yeah.
You could build a hospital. And I think, unfortunately, we live in a capitalist world, and we have to come to terms that capitalists value footballers more than hospitals.
That is heartbreaking.
I'm afraid that's true. So ultimately, I mean, I don't know. Are you in a relationship at the moment,
David? I am,
David. Right.
With myself.
So what if you are... Okay, but are you? Is there a lady? A lucky lady? Right. And I'm sure you're incredibly happy. But...
And that sounded sarcastic.
I doubt it.
I'm sure you're very happy.
But if you were to be the victim of entrapment... So, because I know that as a popular comedian...
By my girlfriend.
Well, no, by someone else, because you're a very celebrated comic. You make people laugh, and you're on a pedestal out there, and you come off, and, you know, people are like, I want to buy you a drink. Maybe you've caught the interest of a female in the crowd. Mm-hmm. So what if somebody was to come up to you after a show and essentially say, listen, Dave, I need you. I just need you now. And it's like, no one's going to find out. This is basically just a thing I have to do. You're on my bucket list. It's a Whitney thing.
Let's just forget that you're on radio right now.
I mean, the first thing I do when anybody talks to me after gigs is check them for a wire.
Yes.
So you
always frisk, don't you?
I've always got the protocol in place not to get caught.
That's also sexual harassment, though. If you're frisking someone for a wire, you're like, I'm not wearing a wire. Aren't you, though?
But
I'll just
check
one more time.
I wonder whether if it's like, let's say it's a romantic encounter, or let's say it's some sort of business opportunity. But either way, I just wonder, Felicity, where the sort of alchemy of it is that if you're in a relationship and you're very loyal and you're not someone that sleeps around and things like that, then generally you're not sending out those messages, hey, I'm interested. Mm. But if you've got an entrapment scenario...
That's what I tell myself, that I'm deeply unattractive to most of the population.
That's quite the opposite is the case. But the entrapment thing, it's artificial, isn't it? You know, because it's not based on the fact that that person was sending out those signals. Similarly, I'm not a corrupt person. But if I'm walking down the street and an undercover journalist goes, hi, Mark, here's £50,000. I need you to take it and actually just keep it. Because if you don't take it, I'll die. So it's just like, take the money, no questions asked. Would I do it? Well, suddenly I'm a criminal.
But are you a criminal, though? Because
that's the question. Sam Allardyce?
If you go, yes, he is. If you go back to the relationship one, that's the perfect metaphor or analogy for it, because you're in a loyal relationship with someone. Mm. If someone came up to me, whether they had feelings or interest in me or not, and said, hey, let's have a night together. I won't tell anyone. You won't tell anyone. It's going to be at this hotel. We're going to fly. I'd still go, no, thank you. I'm in love with my fiancé. Thanks anyway. Yes. That would be the end of it.
Right.
If I was Sam Allardyce, I would go over to do these.
I'm already in love with the 3 million. I'm really in love with the three million.
I'm very loyal to those £3 million. They've been good to me so far. I have a car outside to prove it.
So you're saying that the correct and professional frame of mind and the correct moral structure is such that really, if we've got our heads straight and we're doing things right, then we're not going to be a victim of entrapment, because you'll just say no thanks.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Big not Dave Whitney.
Yeah, I think I agree.
The bag of cash, 50,000?
Yeah, I'm afraid, God, I hate getting up on Mount
Just think
Pius,
how many mirth control gigs you would have to do to get those 50,000. And all I'm saying is just take the bag.
Always it's yours. Thinking about it.
Like that.
Come on, but, Dave.
He says, if you don't take it, I'll die.
What? No, but there was no death in this at all.
What about this? What about the guy who says, you'll be doing me a big favour if you take the money? You'll really be helping me out.
Well, then I could always donate it to charity. I once found, true story, in the Oxford Street branch of Lloyds Bank, a unnamed cheque for £8,000, signed fully.
No!
There was just some litter on the table that I was filling out a form on myself. Went, what's this? It looks like a cheque. It'd be funny if there wasn't a name on it. And there it was. I walked around Soho Square in a cold sweat for about 20 minutes thinking, if I just stick it into my bank, there's... I mean, bear in mind, I'm over my overdraft limit, couldn't be broker.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, £8,000, that could really, help me out here. Cold sweat, thinking, what is the legal thing? If I just write my name on it, is that illegal? He's left essentially a cheque to cash. It's like deserting cash. What's the moral? And I couldn't bring myself to do it. I suppose more to do with being gutless than moral, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
So I just I was stood in front of St. Patrick's Church in Soho.
A godless man praying out for something greater to give some guidance.
I just put the name of the church on it and put it in their collection plate.
You didn't.
Yeah.
What an elegant solution.
Did you?
Yeah. It seemed win-win, because either they get the money and that would be good, or there is a hilarious controversy about the Catholic Church that I'd realised that I'd caused, which has also been funny.
You don't think the Catholic Church has enough money? What about a homeless shelter, for God's sake?
If I'd been stood out in front of a homeless shelter, then I'd have done that.
I would have torn it up. I would have taken it to the bank or torn it up.
Because the problem is, it's not quite a no-brainer. It's not like the bag of cash, is it? Because the problem with the cheque is that if you were to cash it, then
there's a paper trail.
There's a paper trail. Do you know what I mean? It's not. See, I've thought this through because I'm naturally criminally minded.
Yeah.
But what it tells me is that Dave Whitney is a deeply moral man. And that,
but you've got to dig to get there.
But you've got to make an effort.
You've got to stand him outside a church before he makes a decision.
Exactly, but it's a great. You know, you look awkward now.
The clan face is back, isn't it?
The clan cheeks are here. I tell you what, we're going to do. We're going to talk more after a bit of the Kinks, and I must tell you, we're going to talk about Tom Hanks crashing a couple's wedding. It's a great, great story. We're also going to ask, what makes a happy town? Are you a bargain hunter? And also, would you ever ride on the Smiler at Alton Towers? And who are those people that are? I mean, what are they thinking? The other key thing we have to do is talk about Felicity Ward's tour, which is happening now, 50% more likely to die. All of that and more after the Kinks and Sunny Afternoon, which it is today.
Thank you,
my love. That was good.
Sail my yacht. He's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon.
Crouchin? Oh yeah, where are you?
Save me, save me, save me from this squeeze. I got a big fat mama trying to break me.
lovely. Live this life of luxury, blazing on a sunny
presents.
The Hannah Whitten Show.
One of the sexiest things that someone's ever said to me was when I was very much like doing the stuff, we're getting down to it. I was clearly very much getting to the point where I was just like, I want to come. You know when you get in there and you're
and
just
that's
like
allowed.
You're like, I want this. And I think he could tell in terms of my body language that I was just like gearing up.
Good. Yeah.
But then he just stopped and said to me, he was just like, you're going to come when I want you to come. And I was just like, oh my God!
Baller, that's a nice one. Good job.
Every Wednesday.
The Hannah Whitten Show.
From 6 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio. It's free, it's online, and it's with you 24-7. I'm Mark Dolan, reading the news in the company of Felicity Ward and Dave Whitney. And Felicity, you had a brilliant festival this year, essentially a glut of five-star reviews, sell-out shows. The show was called 50% More Likely to Die, which doesn't sound very uplifting or marketable.
No, it doesn't
so
at all.
So why was it a success? What happened? What
I
went
know,
wrong?
I don't know. I love losing money, and I hate audiences.
Yes.
And that's why I named it this. Now, I sort of, when I first read that sentence, which is basically I was reading a book about mental health statistics and had this grand idea that I would write a show about mental health statistics. And I saw that sentence fit, that people with anxiety and depression are 50% more likely to die. And I thought, that is a funny name for a show. If there's a picture of me and I'm like, hey, and looking all really happy, I thought that would be a very funny juxtaposition.
It really
which
is.
Might give you an indication of my dark sense of humour. And I also thought it would mean that children wouldn't come because my humour is not for children.
Yeah.
Mind you, there was a family that still bought tickets one night and I saw them in the line, fortunately. There was like an 11-year-old and I went, it's just, it's not appropriate. And they went, oh, she's pretty. I'm like, I get it, but there is a bit about sexual assault and suicidal construction workers. The rest of the show will definitely be for her, but that bit is not.
I've got to say, I mean, you're generally quite original. We've all got a bit about suicidal construction workers
hack,
and sex,
it?
Haven't we?
You know what I mean? Little bit hack.
It's a little bit kind of stand-up bingo. Do you know what I mean? Tick that box.
Difference between cats and dogs. Suicidal construction workers and sexual assault.
And internet dating.
And internet dating, yeah. So
Michael McIntyre does a bit of really good bit about suicidal
construction workers and sexual assault, doesn't he? It's really funny. It's basically like, well, have you ever noticed?
Yeah, yeah.
They're always suicidal.
Suicidal thoughts, you might have a sexual assault at the same time.
I think that was live at the Apollo, wasn't it?
I think it was. No, he was on
Alan Carr.
Definitely did it on Roadshow. So the idea was that that was what the show was going to be. And then 5 days before my first preview, I was on my way to Liverpool and I left a bag on the bus that had my laptop, keys, wallet, these expensive swimming headphones, all of this stuff in it. Lord. And the next 12 hours, you couldn't have written it. So that became the show with it, then just some jokes about mental health statistics.
Right. Now, what I'm taking out of this story is waterproof headphones.
Yes.
That was what spiked my interest as
Do you
well.
Know what I mean?
Do they work?
I have 5 minutes on you've, it. You've I have lost, 5 minutes in the
You've lost your Edinburgh show, but the big thing is that you find
headphones.
Swimming so unremarkable and so humdrum that you need music just to sort of channel into your soul.
No. Like saying, carrot cake's so boring, I need to put icing on it. No. Yeah. It's what you're enhancing the already wonderful experience. I cannot tell you the joy it brings you when you can listen to water and listen to music underwater. It feels like you're being
music, not podcasts.
No.
It's not like Stuart Goldsmith's Comedian's Comedian.
No, I don't need to hear about us underwater. Like
Stephen King's It.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be terrifying. I just listened to the Jaws.
Jaws?
The Jaws theme song. Yeah, yeah. But it's always on shuffle. So the first time I swam, it was like a really beautiful song, and I almost started crying. It's such a sensory overload. And then I was like loving it, going, "Oh my god, this is the greatest thing!" And then Salt and Pepper's "Let's Talk About Sex" came on. I'm like, "Not as spiritual, but still good."
Still a message.
Presumably, your iPod is also waterproof. You don't have it on some sort of aerial 6 foot above you.
The MP3 player is in the headphones. So they're two little headphones that hang over your ears and then with a wire that runs between both of them at the back of your head. I can't even make jokes about it because I've written them for the show and I don't want to be hack and use them here. But I am so passionate about these headphones. Having said that, they did break.
Okay. So anyway, they're in a bag with your Edinburgh show and your computer and your keys. And I don't wish to make light of it because what happened there was a catastrophic nightmare.
Yes.
How did you feel at that moment that you're separated from the bag? Tell me the emotions at that point.
So this is the thing. The night before, I'd had a heinous gig, like give up comedy kind of gig.
Yeah.
And also I have an anxiety disorder. So if I'm not traveling well, I go straight to 100. So my friend,
if you're not traveling well, what do you mean if you're not traveling well?
Mentally. If I'm going through a rough patch and then something like that happens, that is,
You're vulnerable to.
Yes. Mm. I sort of describe it like, if my anxiety and depression are in check, it's as if I'm walking. If someone taps my ankle, then I just trip up a bit. But when I'm not traveling well, I'm sort of running. So if someone taps my ankle, I spill and fall over.
I'm with you. Yeah.
That's sort of how I view my mental illness.
Does it have a name, this anxiety disorder?
Generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay.
That's the name of, and then my...
I think, don't you think that they should focus group that name?
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't sound like it's very scientific.
It
sounds made up.
Well, there's also social anxiety disorder, which is shortened to SAD. I mean, come on, guys. Yeah. We know.
Yeah,
no need to rub it in.
Isn't that the same title for people who don't like it when it's not sunny?
Seasonal affective disorder. I know. Yeah. They got to break it up.
They need some other words.
I just think that there are folk who are afflicted with what is, serious anxiety disorder, and I've certainly flirted with such things myself, and it's not fun.
No, but not as fun as it sounds.
If you're having to call the boss,
you sort of like tried it on, gave it a go for a couple of days.
I got involved with it via entrapment when I was tricked into worrying about the world and my life and why I was here. But what would be happening is people that have this, including yourself, they might want to call the boss and say, I can't come in today. You know, I love the job. I love you guys. I'm not well. And he said, oh, yeah, okay. What exactly is it? It's like generalized. I mean, he's already hung up on generalized.
Yeah. I know. I totally get it. We need something a bit sassier.
Yeah. But fatal worry syndrome.
Oh, that's good. Fatal worry syndrome.
Yeah. FWS?
Yeah.
What does that spell?
I don't know, but Fuzz. I think FWS is, I believe, a legal high as well. So it's a win-win. Gee, I live near Camden Road and I got a whole bag of FWS last night and I just knocked myself out. I've had very little sleep.
Yeah, you do look a little pale this morning.
I'm on the kind of post-FWS, on the curve. I'm afraid creeping down now.
You're coming down from worry. You're actually going into...
So therefore, you're under stress anyway because of the looming fact that Edinburgh's on its way, and it hangs, doesn't it, like the cloud.
Ooh, like a stone in your stomach.
Sure it does. And you start worrying about that from maybe March.
September?
Yeah.
Probably September.
Brilliant.
Let's be real.
As soon as possible. Late August.
Yeah.
And then what happened is that you had a tough gig. Was it a preview of the show that was on your computer?
No, it was I did a new material night, which went very well. And then I went to do a gig that I'd done before, and I expected the new material night not to go well.
Yeah.
And then I went to do a gig that I'd done before and sort of waltzed in there like, you know, guns in the holster going, I think I got this. And then for 20, I didn't eat it for 20 minutes.
No.
But the last seven, they just hated me so badly. And I walked out all shaken from it going, oh no, maybe I should give up comedy. And I texted my friend, because I'm not going to deal with my feelings by myself, no thank you. And I told her, and she said, I've been listening to this self-esteem hypnosis app that's really been working.
Mm.
And I judged her with my face, but then texted back like, oh, that's great, I hope it works for you. But I didn't have any other options, so I thought, well, I'll give this thing a go. So before I went to Liverpool that morning, I listened to this hypnosis app. And so when I actually lost the bag, I felt very calm. I'm like, this is weird. Like, maybe this hypnosis app has actually done something. So the 12 hours previous and the 12 hours that took place afterwards were so amazing. They just wrote the show. The whole show just got written in 24 hours. It's incredible.
So when you say wrote, I guess what you've done is you've pieced together bits of what you've got. It's like a kind of emergency set list that you've just put together.
Well, it was the...
You can't believe that you wrote an hour, or did you?
The bullet points of the story are, I would say... 40 minutes of the show.
Wow.
But I already had some stand-up about swimming. I already had some stand-up about mental illness.
Yeah.
And at the time I was reading this statistics book, I still had it with me. So it all just presented itself. And then I did a preview 5 days later and went, I think I've got a little show here.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it was. Every year, I'm sure that you know, every year you write Edinburgh, for me, it's different every year. The process of how I wrote it or write it or how it comes together is different. And this has never happened before where I've just been given a story 5 days before.
Well, I must say, every year I write the show and I send it to my agent. And her feedback is always, my notes are, just leave your laptop on a bus would be my advice.
Mm.
Yeah. Just that material that you've written on that show, separate yourself from it.
I can't imagine being sent an Edinburgh show in written form and being asked to read it.
I know.
I can't think of anything worse.
That's all.
I'd rather sandpaper my own eyeballs than read an Edinburgh show.
It's a terrible idea. But
what
it does is.
It's beautiful, by the way. Your eyeballs look very sanded right now.
It's my idea. I do. I don't. I'm convinced she doesn't read it. I do it so that
I... Do you fill it with, like, really racist stuff just to see if she pick up on it?
There's a lot of clan cheek.
Does she come and see the show as well?
She actually did email back some positive, and she said that she really liked suicidal construction workers and the sexual assaults. Well, she said is a bit special.
Felicity's laptop.
Yes, basically I did. And a lot of stuff about my Antipodean childhood.
Yeah. And your womb.
Correct. So that's incredible and everything. And then you had that run. By the way, that's sort of the title and the subject matter. Is it something that audiences take a while to sort of adapt to? Because the festival, I wonder, do you feel a pressure and a tension with the crowd? You know those nights when you see the punters coming in? It's been a rare sunny day in Edinburgh.
Mm.
And people are like sort of tanned, and they're carrying like beers and stuff.
Six beers each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like wearing brightly coloured clothes, and it's just a kind of sunny demeanour about the crowd. And they're like, it's the Edinburgh Festival, I'm having a beer, everything's good. And at that point, do you sometimes worry that your show isn't going to match up with their sort of festival vibe?
Last year I did. Last year's show was far more personal, and it sort of went to a lot darker places. This is one of the broader shows that I've done that still touches on the dark stuff.
And gag heavy.
And very gag heavy, so I don't feel that nervousness. I'm not like, oh, God. Because I mention it, I wear it very loosely in this show. Where in the last show, it was very much about my IBS and my anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
And it was a personal story and experience with how I came to terms with it, how I got through it, or, you know, keep dealing with it, what have you.
So creatively, where are you at now? Creatively, are you in the, let's say going forward, let's say the next show, are you thinking, okay, back to the slightly more brutal autobiographical stuff, or are we now the slightly more, I don't know, the crowd pleaser? Where are we at?
We are taking September off to think about that. I'm not considering where we're going from now. I've written... What's good is I've just written a bunch of notes of material that I would like to write, and that's just sitting there and festering, and that's what it does in my head, fester. It doesn't mull or marinate, it festers. But I'm writing other things as well, so I'm just giving stand-up just like a couple of weeks break of some new stuff.
Now, we're supposed to be talking about the news, but you guys have made a schoolboy and schoolgirl error, which is that you're far too compelling as people for me to talk about the news.
I'm
although
so sorry.
We will. I know, and I admonish you for being hashtag amazing. How dare
hashtag
you?
Hashtag moist wool.
Thank you. But now listen, moist wool over there in a very smart Czech shirt.
Clanny.
In the comedy that you do, what's interesting is it's confessional too, and it's like wonderfully abrasive and funny, and it's just you saying, this is some stuff about my life which I'm going to say out loud now. But because you're a funny, funny man, then we're laughing. If I just talked about my life, I'd think people would be, you know, just checking their watch and Facebook update and stuff. But that's kind of what you do, isn't it? You basically share.
Yeah, I think so. I think when I was very new, I was lucky enough to be sharing a drink with Mr. Reginald D. Hunter, and he said something quite offhand, and I don't even know if he, like, you know, if it's something that he says often or something, but he said, decide what you really think and prove your point with jokes.
Wow.
And it's kind of stuck with me. And
I'm just getting my pen and paper.
Let's have that. That's next year's Edinburgh show sorted out.
There you go.
And it really, because it's quite easy to make a joke about what you think the status quo opinion of something. The zeitgeist thinks that Allardyce is a sham. Mm. That's it. And there'll be hundreds of comedians going on stage this weekend up and down the country saying that. It's far funnier if you actually think, well, isn't that what they do? You know, it's far, far funnier if you're not, if you, I mean, don't orchestrate the fact being against the common vibe. It's
counterintuitive.
Only funny if that's what you really think.
Yeah.
But when the expenses scandal was going on, I had a bit about that, which I opened up by saying, were you disgusted by the expenses scandal? And the audience goes, yeah! I'm like, really? I had no idea we were so touchy about accountancy. No idea.
Yeah, that's it.
And then I'd list other things that politicians had done, like send us to illegal wars and sell the nation's gold in a time of boom so there's nothing in the bank for recession. That's fine. But that guy had two trouser presses. What a prick.
Yeah.
And so
it's
was fun to do that routine because you were going against the stream of the so-called sort of common perspective of it.
I like it. And also there's a sort of there's a nice satirical point to make, which is that there are people living under regimes, like dictatorial regimes, who would just kill for an MP that had like a moat for his ducks. And you're like, I'll pay for the moat. Let him have the moat.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
I'll work the drawbridge.
Do you know what I mean?
Is that a job? Can I take that job? I need a job.
But you do, in a way, some of your comedy touches subtly on mental health. In other words, you kind of talk about, you do, I mean, a lot of it's exaggeration of comic effect, a lot of it's material, it's gags, don't get me wrong, but you know, you joke about sometimes getting drunk and making mistakes and doing stupid things, not being the perfect partner, not being a great human being.
No.
It's a sort of Larry David's
fall guy. Let's separate that from mental illness, though. Let's be very clear that mental illness is an illness, and
now that's
not
a good
just
David's
getting,
not ill, he's just flawed.
He's just a bad person, okay?
Yes, it's a good point.
I'm a sick person trying to get well.
David
is a bad person trying to get good. Okay, let's make a very clear distinction there.
I think it's a very, very good point.
It's a very good point.
Busted.
I do make...
Do the audiences love when we share the problems we have and the imperfections of ourselves?
Yeah, definitely. No
is that kind of the gig? Is that the brief?
I think it's far harder to make people laugh when you're happy.
Yeah.
When you're doing something
which
good.
Which is why I've avoided it.
Absolutely. That's my excuse too.
When comedians start routines with, I was doing a gig in Malta. Oh, I was doing a gig out in India. You're just stop rattling through your CV, you tedious prick.
That's right. I talk about my shows in Cardiff and Aberystwyth. And the audience just immediately emote.
Yeah.
They're like,
oh God,
wow.
They imagine his pain.
I'd work the drawbridge at your emote.
I will drink to that. So the show is now touring.
Yes,
It starts Sunday, which is fantastic. And you are around the country. I mean, look at this. Exeter, brilliant. Norwich, Huddersfield, Harrogate, Bath, Glasgow. You're covering every inch of the British Isles.
Due to very little demand.
Oh, stop it.
No,
You're going to have to accept at one point that you're successful and brilliant and glittering and marvellous.
When I sell tickets, I will accept that.
So do you expect to have a different reception to the material around the country or not? Or do you feel like Edinburgh has pretty much defined the show for you and this is where we're at, it's what it is?
Well, I previewed it 17 times. I did it in York. I did it in London. I did it in Brighton, I think. But I did it outside of...
And is this the show that was written in, like, for over 12 hours?
Yeah.
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 So you previewed it after Edinburgh?
No. Before Edinburgh, I previewed it.
You did.
And it's probably changed. It was probably 60 or 70% the same as them when
By
it went
the way,
to Edinburgh.
What about that show that's on the laptop? Will we ever see that?
No, that was all the material... look, I don't want to give away the ending.
Okay, fine.
Just
come and see the show.
Just come and see the show.
See, your PR, Bex Colwell, is going to be so happy that you just chipped in at that point.
There's so many people
Spoiler
that
will
go,
alert.
Did you get the bag back? I'm like, come and see the show.
Oh, come and see the show.
This is blowing my mind. Your show has an ending. My show's just stop.
50%.
That's the last joke.
The lights go out.
It's just, that was the last joke. You can go now.
Thank you.
Felicity Ward's show and her touring show is called Felicity Ward 50% More Likely to Die. And here's my review of it. This is what I'd like to go on the buses when you're in the West End, which is 50% more likely to die, 100% more likely to laugh.
Aww.
Mark Dolan, Fubar Radio.
5 stars.
Hashtag clan cheeks. You are also in a movie.
Yes.
So this is basically your careers are going really well. Thanks for rubbing it in my face.
You got your own radio show, mate. You're doing fine.
Yeah. God bless you for that. Well done.
See?
Nicely recovered. God bless you.
I don't have an attic in Islington with some microphones.
See?
Hey, that is not the way.
That's why I love him. It's tough love. It's
cruel,
tough love.
Cruel.
It's actually a flirtation thing. It's how Dave rolls. I feel you're grooming me, aren't you?
Absolutely.
If you could be any more well-groomed, Mark Dolan.
God bless you. You're in a movie.
Yes.
What's the movie called?
Well, I've been lucky enough to do two this year. I did Guardians, which...
Did you say Guardians?
Guardians, yes. Which is about guardians who get an amazing house in central London for very little rent because they stop squatters from moving in. It is a sort of comedy horror. That's hoping it's going to, I believe, start the festival circuit at the end of this year. And
congratulations!
Are you
an innocent victim of some kind of supernatural force? Are you just like this guy who's just sort of walking down the street,
loud, offensive alcoholic? And I play.
What research did you do?
36 years worth of research.
You literally phoned it in.
Yeah.
It's actually just home footage. They didn't even have to film it.
What's really disturbing is it was written for me.
By all of your ex-girlfriends.
Yes. Yeah, they got together in a little writing room.
And this is the bit where he fears commitment. And this is the bit where...
What drove me mad about him was the moist wool.
Yeah. And those clan cheeks. Ugh, get a hashtag.
God. So that's one, and that is Guardians coming out later in the year. Yeah. And then you've only gone and done another one.
Yes.
Which sounds to me like career momentum.
Let's hope so.
You've made more films this year than bloody Jude Law.
You've made more films than I've ever made.
Jude Law, whose answer machine message says, "Yes, I'll do it."
That's harsh.
That is very harsh.
I love him, though. He's a great actor. And let's be honest, he's got mouths to feed. Yeah. He is fertile.
Yeah.
He's got a litter of children. A litany. So, which you will soon, too. Right, this next one, tell me.
It's a horror movie set in an abandoned asylum, and mentally, we actually filmed it in an abandoned asylum, which we also slept in because there wasn't a budget to put us up in hotels.
Was that in, like, Essex?
No, it was up near Chester.
Okay.
It was a phenomenal experience, I have to admit. And the first night we were there, when we literally, like,
making our sort of like cots out of air beds and stuff, and getting to terms with the conditions, because we were warned. We were like, look, you're going to be staying on this location, you're all staying there. But it was so creepy when you arrived. Yeah. And it felt like it had been abandoned in a rush.
Right.
Like, we opened the door and like chairs.
There's still some kids in there.
Yeah.
They're fully grown men now with beards and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the point of the movie. That
spoiler
someone
alert.
Was still there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great fun to shoot. So now, that
have we got a working title for that?
That's called Cane Hill.
Cane Hill, and you've just, and that's where the asylum is, on Cane Hill.
It's the name of the asylum.
Cane Hill Asylum. This is exciting. And meanwhile, you're still being a stand-up comedian.
Yes,
as well.
Very much so. I'll be back at my regular club, the Backyard Comedy Club, this Thursday, which I am nearly every Thursday.
Which is the greatest comedy club in East London and could be the greatest comedy club in London.
If not the world.
Thanks, comics that have come to play it.
Yeah.
And want to come back.
And want to come back.
Come back whenever you like.
I'll tell you something. Let's talk about the news now, because it's very exciting. By the way, what's the website for your show? Is there a website?
Just go to mine, which is felicityward.com.
Bang. Do it. Dave Whitney, Twitter handle?
Yeah, D Whitney.
And also Dave Whitney.
DavidWhitney.org.
Bang. Nailed it.
David Whitney and his organ.
Tom Hanks crashed a couple's wedding this week. Yes, indeed. He was jogging through Central Park when he spotted a couple, Elizabeth and Ryan, who were posing for their wedding photos. He slowed down to jump into some pictures with the pair, who were more than happy to welcome a man who is, can we agree, Tom Hanks is America's favourite actor.
Should we call him what he is? Dignitary.
He is a dignitary, isn't he? He is just... I mean, I remember years and years ago when they were talking about Operation Yew Tree. I remember saying...
I'm excited where this is going.
This is going to be amazing, right? I remember saying, and I honestly said this, I said, okay, there's all these rumours about these different people. If it's true about Rolf Harris, I'm just going home. I don't know what going home means, but I'm just out of here.
Yeah.
It's over with Rolf Harris, who turned out to be, a very, very... bad man.
Very bad. Convictedly bad.
Exactly. So I don't want to, I'm like a really bad, like a sort of track record on this, but Tom Hanks to me, if anything came out about Tom Hanks, I'm out of here.
I don't believe he's done anything wrong.
It's impossible.
Life. He's the purest man alive.
He is pure.
Yeah.
Good actor.
He's condensed goodness.
A nice man.
Doesn't take himself too seriously.
Yeah.
Which we are very fond of.
So is there anyone better to be wedding crashed at than by Tom?
Well, I played the bagpipes at Gwen Stefani's wedding.
Is that a euphemism, by the way? Shut your face. He has got a clan face.
He's been in jail for playing the bagpipes. Those aren't bagpipes.
I believe she hasn't stopped going on about who played the bagpipes at her wedding since it happened. So
you can play the pipes?
Yep. Yeah.
Do you have Scottish?
I was born in Scotland, in Aberdeen.
Goodness me.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And where did they get married?
In Common Garden.
Right.
At the Actors' Church, St. Paul's in Common Garden.
And okay. You got a gig playing the bagpipes.
I was busking in Piccadilly Circus.
Do you feel somewhat responsible for their separation?
Well, no, I feel more responsible for the fact that for a celebrity couple, they stayed together for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, they're above the curve, aren't they? For a decade? Well done.
Yeah, they were a decade. It's good. Yeah. It's pretty good.
If you get me to play the pipes at your wedding, you get a good
decade. I feel there's a heartwarming story here, like a kind of rags-to-riches thing, like a bit of an Ed Sheeran vibe, that you're on the street. It feels like a Richard Curtis film. You're in Notting Hill and you're playing the bagpipes.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's Piccadilly Circus.
What happened?
A guy came up to me and said, do I do weddings? And I said yes, and I gave him my phone number. A couple of days later, I got a phone call, and he asked me the price and all that sort of stuff. And
$250?
Minimum.
I didn't know that they were famous people, so I gave them my normal piddly fee.
Silly sausage.
That he asked me if I could turn up to the rehearsal, and I was like, man, I've played the bagpipes at hundreds of weddings, we really don't need the rehearsal. I can turn up, you tell me where to stand, I play until he gave me a signal to stop. That's it. And he went, oh, we'll pay you for the rehearsal as well. And I thought, hello.
I like a rehearsal.
Yeah. And so I turned up in in pieces. I'd been out a big night out the night before, but I'd also been busking the day before, so I was kilted up even though I hadn't been home. So I'd been out.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So you're in like a soiled kilt.
God, he takes his rehearsal seriously, I think. He looks terrible.
And I apologise to the best man, getting, I'm really sorry my state and I must stink, but I promise I'll be scrubbed up like a new penny tomorrow. And he went, don't worry, they think it's hilarious because they're rock stars. I went, what? Yeah, as a term, they're rock stars. I mean, they're
all rock stars on our own day.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. That's what I thought he meant. And then I sat next down on this bench outside the church with this very pretty lady. And said, I'm David the Pope. And she said, are you full-time piping? I went, no, I'm at drama school, but you know, it's a little bit of extra money. And I said, what do you do? And she said, I'm a singer. Went, oh, really? We do a bit of singing at my drama school, but it's mainly acting. As I sort of stifled a little bit of sick in my mouth. And the next day at the reception, she came up to me and said, so you didn't know who we were? And I went, like, no at all. Said, so you didn't rip us off like everybody else? I went, no, my usual fee, plus free food and drink all day and a complimentary bridesmaid.
Which takes it up to about 2,500 a year.
And then when I said, and a complimentary bridesmaid, she didn't break step. She just went, you only won one bridesmaid?
Oh, funny celebrities.
Great work.
Legends.
That's so great.
It's a great story. So it's lovely when, I suppose, it's like a celebrity intervention. I like the idea that celebrities can sometimes make a calculation in their mind, which is, it would probably be amazing for them if I just popped in and said hi now. Now, I know that if it was like a minor celebrity, it would seem like...
yeah, they're
that's
trying
all
to get
I think when
sort of
I look at this. They're quite young. What if they don't know that he did the Toy Story voice? What if they haven't seen Castaway? That's all I could... What if he went up and went, guys, and they're like, can we help you, old man? Like, how devastating. It would be. Are you going for a jog? Good for you. Is your carer waiting at the other end?
All right. Well, if his career had peaked at big, then I can see your point. But
Captain Phillips?
But I know what you mean. I don't think like Judge Reinhold probably couldn't do this.
No, oh mate, poor Judge Reinhold. God, didn't he have a good decade?
Yeah.
And then,
you proved your point because I don't know who Judge Reinhold.
Would
know
Kevin Spader? Would Kevin Spader struggle?
I don't know who Kevin Spader
is. What about one of the Baldwin brothers that isn't Alec Baldwin?
The other Baldwin brother. Billy.
What about Eric Roberts, the brother of Julia Roberts? He's like, hi, I'm Eric. You know what? You'd almost have to present a CV.
A picture of the two of them.
Yeah, you're like, here's a photograph of me in a film from the 80s. It went straight to video, but was quite well received.
Eric Stoltz.
Oh, Eric Stoltz, and he plays the gangster in every film, doesn't he? Isn't that Stoltz's vibe?
He was a dealer in Pulp Fiction. You know the big Eric Stoltz story.
Go.
He was Michael J. Fox's character in Back to the Future. He filmed for like...
Please don't tell me this.
Yeah, he filmed for like 2 or 3 weeks and they went, he's so good, but he's not funny. And they had to replace him. He had the part where there's hours of footage of him filming as Marty McFly.
No.
Yep. And then they got Michael J. Fox, who was doing Growing Pains at the time. So he'd film Growing Pains in the day, and then he'd go on a film Back to the Future at night and was doing these two massive jobs at the same time.
Actors getting fired from movies. You know, Harvey Keitel got fired from Apocalypse Now, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's not really hurt him. He also walked off the set of Eyes Wide Shut.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised because I walked out of the cinema, so I can...
You can relate.
That was a lazy joke. I haven't even seen the film. It was based on a stereotype about the film, which is it's long and slow.
I thought it was quite good and fresh. I think you did great, mate.
I will not have anything bad said about any Kubrick movie.
I like the idea. If you're like Tom Hanks, in your mind, you're like, look, I know it's going to seem egotistical, but it'll be amazing for them. And it was. Celebrity encounters with you guys. I've got a couple for you. These are not even encounters. But Paul McCartney, who is the most successful composer of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And an icon. And I mean, Kenwood House, which is a lovely sort of stately home.
Ran past it this morning.
Art gallery, well done. Art gallery in Hampstead.
Was there this year for the first time and we did dress-ups. It was our anniversary of getting engaged. We dressed up in children's clothes.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, thanks.
Well done. And I'm there and there's a free art gallery and there's a cafe and I'm at the art gallery with my young son and I look out the window and a lady walks past and I thought, that woman looks like a kind of slightly rough Heather Mills McCartney. That's a terrible thing to say, isn't it? But that's, I'm afraid, occasionally how my mind works. I'm like, she looks like Heather Mills McCartney, but just like let herself go a bit. And then I came out and I'm like, no, it just is Heather Mills McCartney.
I'm like,
just
okay,
having a bad day.
Fair enough. So she was her, and she was with a child that was obviously Paul McCartney's child. No problem. Anyway, I'm over that. I've moved on. And I'm just like hanging around on
the
Green.
I like the idea that you couldn't move on from that. Well, that type of colossal event.
That's the kind of guy easy. I am. It's I not can easy. Just see Heather Mills McCartney and I can move on with my day. I don't know how you guys get along.
Just frozen there. Stuck in that moment for the rest of your life.
Just staring into the abyss.
Yeah. But you see, Mark, yeah, he hasn't stopped going on about that Heather Mills.
Obsessed. So I'm like over it. And it's a bit like a well-plotted Agatha Christie story where, you know, it's like for some reason I needed to see her and then we don't talk about it anymore until towards the end and it becomes relevant again. So I've forgotten about it. I'm getting on with my day and I'm on the lawn outside Kenwood House and my son's there and there's this dog that's sort of near my son and I'm like, oh, cute dog. I'm one that I talk to all dogs, you know what I mean?
Me
I'm
too.
Weird like that and children, which not allowed anymore, but that's fine. And so I'm like, hello, and I stroke this dog, whatever. And then the owner like wants the dog to come back and the owner goes, you know, yoo-hoo or whatever. And then I look up.
To you or the dog?
Well, I don't know. I look over. That owner is actually Paul McCartney now. It's just me and Paul McCartney. He's approximately 2.5 meters from me. It's McCartney and me. And the thing is, I'm like manhandling his dog.
Oh,
he probably thinks it's some kind of dog napping scenario.
What kind of dog is it?
Because, I mean, obviously,
but
it
you're
was.
Famous as well, Mark.
It was a sort of fluffy black dog.
It's not the same thing, though, is it? It's not quite the same.
It's not. I mean, I'm so working on it. I definitely feel like I've made some progress after this year's Edinburgh to becoming sort of the equivalent
the
of
Paul
McCartney.
McCartney.
Anyhow, cut a long story short. McCartney is now looking at me.
He's got an Asbo on you.
He's kind of had to look at me because celebrities always look away, but he's kind of got a deal with me because I'm near his dog and stuff. Then he smiled at my son. So I will never let him forget that he's been smiled at by Paul McCartney.
And also, then it's the perfect start to a brilliant court case.
It is really. And then he did this thing for the dog and he went like that, okay? He whistled in the most sublime way I've ever heard in my life. It was just magical. It was like the angels. Anyhow, the dog then went to McCartney and then off they went. And I just thought, I've been... Like, Paul McCartney has whistled in my direction.
In your face.
Do you know what I mean? And I thought this other thing, which is, when he whistled beautifully, and it was like an original tune that he just improvised because he's Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Did you record it?
Luckily, I got the whole thing. I periscoped every moment.
Right.
And then Paul's peoples just moved me on. No, of course not. It's just going to be one for the memory bank. Not bad, though. That's my point. I mean, it's a nothing story, but because it's McCartney,
no,
it's everything.
That's not a nothing story.
Really?
That's magic.
It's not bad, is it? Quick couple of other ones for you. This isn't for me. Robert Palmer, who sang, what was it?
Addicted. Simply Irresistible. Addicted to Love.
Yep. Beautiful
looking
songs.
Looking for Clues.
Yeah.
You're an encyclopedia.
Basically,
Palmer, I am.
Basically, he was in an apartment visiting a friend. And he heard...
Is that alluded to one of his songs?
Yeah, but he was addicted to love. Did you do that one?
Yeah.
So anyway, he heard a song playing of his upstairs in a neighbouring apartment. And so he just thought, okay, shits and giggles, let's do this.
That's so great.
So he went upstairs, he rang the doorbell. Some guy who's listening to music opens the door and he goes, hi, I'm Robert Palmer and I just want to say thanks for playing my record.
Wow, that is cool.
Quite cool, isn't it?
Can you imagine opening the door?
There's the guy that I've just been singing along to in the shower.
Yeah. You would think that you're getting punked. You're like, no, he just looks like a bad version of Heather Mills McCartney.
That's all I'm thinking. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the music's rolling. This is Arctic Monkeys, Are You Mine? Dave Whitney, you got to say something.
Nah, not enough time.
Go on, do it.
Addicted to Love was in the movie Cocktail, which I bought the soundtrack for that track, and it was on there, and I went back into our price, livid, and I said, it's the song of the movie, it's the theme tune of Cocktail, for God's sake, and they went, you do know it already exists on other albums, and I was like, no, didn't know.
And that was the birth of music.
And God bless you for that. And you see, we started with Comedy Gold, we ended it, we bookended it, which is what happens when you get Whitney, that's what you're paying for.
Whitney and Ward.
What are we paying you today? Are we paying your bagpipes rate today?
I believe that is true.
Is it 125 plus VAT?
And
sandwiches.
And
we're out of here. It's been FUBAR Radio. I've been Mark Dolan almost continually for an hour.
Consistently.
You've been Dave Whitney. You've been Felicity Ward. Mm-hmm. You've both been extraordinary.
And I say that every week. I normally don't mean it. Today I do.
Thank you.
The tour's happening. Go see Felicity Ward. And her show is called 50% More Likely to Die. And go see Dave Whitney either in a comedy club such as The Backyard or on the big screen or just in Leicester Square on the floor outside a tube station. I've been Mark Dolan. See you soon.
Silver lining, Lone Ranger riding through an open space. In my mind, when she's not right there beside me, I go crazy.